Welcome to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast. I'm Jeff, and recently my co-host Andrew and I got to cover the Austin Film Festival, where we interviewed a lot of great writers and directors and actors. During the festival, we uploaded shorter versions of all of these conversations, and now, over the next few weeks, we are going to be uploading the longer versions of all of these conversations we had during the Austin Film Festival. So stick around, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Welcome to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined alongside my co-host Jeff, as always. Today we have on returning guest and actress Rebecca Kennedy, along with the director and producers of her latest indie film, The Veil, which is director Cameron Bile and producer Kyle Andrews.
Kyle, Cameron, and Rebecca are screening their new film at the Austin Film Festival, and while they were in town, Andrew and I had a chance to catch up with them and discuss the new film. Hello, everybody. This is the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, and we are deep into our coverage of the Austin Film Festival, and we're excited to be chatting with the filmmaking team behind The Veil. This is actually the third time we've chatted with Rebecca Kennedy, who stars in The Veil, so she's practically a regular on the show now. In addition to Rebecca, we have director Cameron Bile and producer Kyle Andrews. So welcome, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks.
Thanks. I'm so glad to be back.
So, Kyle, let's start with you. What is The Veil, and where did this idea come from?
Well, the Veil is a feature film. It's a supernatural Southern Gothic horror story. It's got a whole lot of elements from different genres that we've pulled in to coalesce on this one story that surrounds a retired priest in a small farmstead in Pennsylvania, and an Amish woman who comes to him in the middle of the night for help while a big green aurora borealis has suddenly descended over the farmstead. It's a labor of love that is actually from the brain trust of writer-director Cameron Bile. Cameron came up with this idea. His wife is from the area in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where we also shot. We shot on location. And he brought the script to me a couple years ago. We went over the details of it, developed it a bit more, and then we shot it and put in post-production, and now here we are about to show it to the good folks in Austin.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and Cameron, tell us a little bit more about how you developed this idea and turned it into a screenplay.
Absolutely, sure. So, it started like so many ways that a lot of filmmakers tend to finally latch onto something is it's the amalgamation of several different stories that I've been developing for quite a long time. And a lot of it
were they different stories, like different characters? Were they related in any way, or did you like borrow from one plot to expand on this story?
They were not related in any way.
Interesting.
They were totally different concepts that I just kind of been playing around with, and it didn't really, nothing really clicked until I had the idea to combine elements together. There was an idea about a man in a isolated house somewhere in the mountains, being visited by a young woman in the middle of the night who needed assistance, and it was kind of a ghost story. And then there was a completely separate story about a total electrical outage over Los Angeles with the Northern Lights coming into play, and how seemingly impossible that is. But that was more of like a character drama. And then when I realized that you could combine those two conceits into something, that's when I really felt that I had the real kernel of an idea. And when I was in Pennsylvania visiting my in-laws, I took a look around at the Amish country that was surrounding us, and felt, oh, that would be a really interesting angle into the story with this community of people that are not really depicted as much in mainstream culture. And when they are, it's often from this very strange, very foreign feeling worldview. Let's look at these very strange people who are centuries behind us technologically speaking, and want to stay that way. How odd is that? How strange is that? And I wanted to push back against that and say, let's dial in on what is dramatically interesting about that worldview, and how does that contribute to the conflict with the modern world, and especially the a Roman Catholic worldview that I was brought up in, and I could kind of bring that kind of personal experience into.
Staying with you, Cameron, what was it like directing your story? And I'm curious how much of it changed, if at all, once production started.
Well, it was, you know, it's really interesting. I said this at our Q&A at the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival, where we had our world premiere. You know, this is not the film that I set out to make, but that's because it is so much better than what I could have envisioned as just a single person. Everybody from Kyle to Rebecca to Sean to all of our crew members, our production designer, our cinematographer, our composer, and our sound mixer, everybody, they all brought in an amazing dedication to the story. They all really believed in the story that we were telling. It became our story instead of just simply my story. And because of that, they also brought in their own worldviews, their own experiences, their own ideas. And every time that happened, it just made the project richer. It made it deeper, more nuanced. It's far superior to the movie that I had in my head when I was set out to make it. The experience of making it, I think, it had its challenges like any, independent film does. But I feel that because of our crew that we had assembled, it was a mix of some people from LA as well as local craftspeople in Pennsylvania. Everybody really came together really nicely and was just dedicated to seeing this project through. And, shooting 70 pages in 10 days is not a small.
You shot this in 10 days?
Yes.
Wow.
With one extra day in Los Angeles for pickups.
It looks fantastic. I mean, the production value is great.
Yeah. And that is a testament to our collaborators who really, brought everything and did truly created miracles with very limited resources.
That is interesting. And well, that's a great thing about collaboration. Everybody brings something to the table. And I think that's the sign, in my opinion, of a good director and producer when they bring people to the table and then let them contribute as much as possible with new ideas as well as, making your ideas work. So that's really cool. Wow, 10 days, that's crazy. And how did you guys connect with Rebecca?
Well, I'll pass that along to Kyle because he was the kind of the point person there.
I'm happy to answer that question because it happened the way things happen in Los Angeles often. You just sit in the same room with a person and suddenly you're friends. Rebecca and I met at an acting class here in Los Angeles. I'm actually by trade an actor in addition to a producer and writer. So I have been working in LA as an actor for a long time. I audited a class that I was interested in. I didn't end up taking the class, but the one audit I was there for, I ended up sitting next to Rebecca Kennedy. And I've said this before, I recognized Rebecca from this incredible performance she gave on Law & Order SVU in an episode called The Book of Esther, where she's playing Esther. I knew right at that, I sat next to Brilliance and I knew that at the moment. I didn't let it on because that would be awkward, but we spoke and we really hit it off. And fast forward a couple years later, Cam hands the script to me, we develop it a little bit. And as we're working on the character of Hannah, I couldn't get Rebecca out of my mind. There was never anybody else who I at all wanted to offer the part to. And thankfully, when I did offer it to her, she loved the script and she immediately said yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
what a,
and Rebecca.
What a serendipitous thing.
Right?
Yeah, and I know you've teased out the role in the past, Rebecca, in previous episodes we've had you on, but I'm curious now that you can officially talk about it, how did you prepare for the role?
Yeah, that's a great question. I did a lot of research on the Amish community, the Amish way of life, and I also was able to connect through Cameron and Kyle with a woman who used to be in the Amish community, and her and I talked over Zoom for several hours. I wrote a ton of notes and just could basically ask her any question I wanted, which was amazing because to have that kind of access, because there's a lot of documentaries, there's some stuff online, but obviously to be able to talk to someone that used to be in that community was just gold. And there was so much I learned from her that I would have never known Something simply as they pray before they eat. So that was something that we were able to incorporate in the script. Something that's seemingly simple, but just really grounded me in hopefully in being able to understand a little bit more of that life and how they live and how their feelings and beliefs and how that, you know, infiltrates everything they do. So that helped a ton. And then just, you know, actory stuff, getting to the down to the core of who she is and what she needed and how I could relate to her, you know, because, you know, her situation is obviously so much different than mine. And what were the things I could relate to as I do understand, you know, loneliness and feeling isolated and feeling like no one understands me. So I really just grasped onto those things. And then, of course, had, you know, an amazing director and producer and co-star, Sean, who helped me throughout the whole process and was encouraging and supportive and really made me feel safe and be able to give hopefully the best performance I could give.
So when you're on set, I'm curious, do you try to maintain that mindset of, because it sounds like it's a pretty intense character. So I'm right. curious, on set, I've worked with actors who, you know, it's like clicking a switch. They're, you know, you say action and they're suddenly on. And then there are others that really need to stay in that moment as much as they can in between takes. I'm curious, how did that work for you?
Yeah, that's great. I'm not method in the sense that I stay in character the whole time. I deeply respect those people, and anyone that has any process is anyone's process, and I would never question it. For me, I just can't. It's too tiring. I have to be able to come out a little bit. But when I'm doing a scene, a particularly emotional or physically demanding or intense scene, I will stay in it while we're filming that scene. And then when we're, you know, when we move on or we're at lunch, I, you know, can kind of let that go. It's always a little bit there. And I always kind of, you know, like Cameron said, we were shooting in Pennsylvania, kind of in the middle of nowhere. So that really helped with feeling kind of isolated because, you know, we're filming every day. We had, you know, a couple days, like a day off or something. And then, you know, you're too tired to really do anything, right? So you kind of stay. So I was kind of staying in my hotel when I wasn't on set. And, you know, being able to talk to my husband a little bit because, you know, he's on a different schedule and just, feeling kind of that feeling kind of always kind of stays. And so I'm always kind of thinking about what that kind of infiltrates into me, if that makes sense. So it's like, sure. I'm never like, oh, you have to call me Hannah when we're on our way home or anything like that. But it's always kind of in my mind, staying sensitive and what I can use from what stuff around me, what I can bring on set.
Cameron, I want to circle back to you. You know, indie filmmakers often, and this is could, you know, be for Kyle as well, but indie filmmakers often have to wear so many hats, you know, because it's a, as you said, you shot in 10 days. And sometimes, you know, crew people and directors and producers are doing multiple things. I'm curious what roles you typically take on and how you balance those responsibilities, you know, in other than directing is what I'm getting at. Because I know what I've worked on some low budget projects and, you know, you're doing a lot of different things. So I'm curious, did you and Kyle kind of split things up and take on other responsibilities?
Yeah. So, you know, for so many years when I was learning my craft, I operated almost like a one-man band, just out of necessity. And those tools, that tool set, but also those habits have really kind of informed how I work with larger scales. And it's both a blessing and a curse. Kyle will be the first to tell you that I can have trouble delegating sometimes. I you know, in addition to directing on set and, you know, I was the bus driver. I was shuttling people back and forth in the van, you know, and I think that kind of speaks to, I view my crew and my cast and my collaborators as an extension of not just myself, but as family. And I pride myself on taking good care of them, even if that involves being the one to drive them home at the end of the shoot every day. That being said, you know, we found that the scale at which the film required a certain scale, and as we were making it, required adapting the way that I operate kind of on the fly. A lot of the times, my directing has also incorporated elements of, you know, script supervision and assistant directing, all those duties that kind of fall to separate people. I've absorbed somewhat organically into my directing style, but we also found that during the shoot, we needed a little bit more of a delineation. So Kyle and I and our cinematographer, David, kind of created this three-headed hydra of organizational action. You know, we both kind of took, all three of us took on duties of assistant directing in a sense and keeping things in check. Kyle acted, you know, in addition to producing, he also acted as a unit production manager. So he was running the location and making sure everybody's lunch orders were taken care of and making sure and anticipating all of our needs before we even knew that we needed them. And, you know, I think it worked well for the purposes of the shoot. It might have created some challenges that we otherwise didn't need. I think our next one, we will have much more of a clear delineation and larger crews. But the setup for The Veil was one that was born out of a budgetary necessity. And given those limitations, I think that we did pretty well.
If I may, I would love to piggyback on that for a second, because as producer, my role in part is to be a hype man for Cameron, because Cameron, as you can hear in everything he's saying, he's so humble and he's such humility when it comes to doing the work. But the effort put in by Cameron is one of leadership that we all had to match on set. I want to speak specifically to what Cameron did. He was not only the director and not only the writer, he was also the editor. He was also, yeah, because we didn't have a VFX person in post-production, he learned how to do VFX to make sure that all of the visuals that you're seeing are popping off the screen. And I'm just going to say that it was that sort of not panicking, not going, woe is me, how, I don't have enough to make the movie I want to make. Instead, seeing where the holes are and then learning how to fill them as best we can in a way that really, I think, accentuated the work that Cameron was already doing as writer-director and really got us to the version of the movie that we're all so very proud of and we can't wait for people to see.
I'm glad you brought up, you know, the editing, because I have kind of a two-parter regarding that. One, I don't want to give anything away, but... Was it an editorial moment at that 21-minute mark where you have that crazy series of shots? I think you might know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
I
know exactly what you're talking about.
Was that in the script, or was that an editorial where did that come from?
Cam,
and don't give it away. I don't want to give anything away. I'm just curious.
Do you know what he's talking about, Cam?
I think so. Let me see. The 21-minute mark.
I think so. And he's going to check for, it was something we did have to, it was a post-production choice for sure.
So that was not in the script that way?
Not initially. No. It came out of the footage that we had. And
it's
it came
so cool.
out of,
it's very, very cool.
I thought when Cam came upon that idea as the transition into, the second act, it was kind of a moment of, yeah, this was here the whole time. We just had to get to the point where it made sense to do it that way. And then this is a film that very much we set things up for success. And then when it was time, we found the success because we had set it up.
Interesting. And I have one other question regarding editorial, because I know I've worked on shoots where we do everything traditionally and slate every scene and so forth. But sometimes if I'm editing, because Andrew and I edit as well, you know, we just go in and we don't slate things because we know we've got it all storyboarded. We know how we're going to edit it. And you can move so much faster if you skip that step, which, you know, may be a bad idea for some people. But since you were editing, did you make choices like that just to move more quickly?
Yeah, essentially. Okay. I mean, yeah. So
yeah, that's a question for Cam. I'm sorry about
sure,
that.
Sure, no problem. I think it's kind of funny. It's the process of editing the film was a process of moving away from initial preconceptions and then organically finding our way back to them in a in a way that justified the original creative decision. You know, just to put a finer point on that moment at the 21 minute mark, I believe that was something that was in earlier drafts of the script, and then it kind of fell away.
It
felt like something that went a little too far in a specific direction too soon. And once we had the film in the can and we were working on it and trying to figure out, okay, what is it about this moment that we need to hit? What isn't working? What will make it work? You know, you kind of go back to those earlier ideas and you realize you have the materials to make that happen. And it's just kind of it's a reinforcement of your initial creative inclinations, which is really cool because it kind of tells you that you're on the right track and you kind of always have been. And I think that happened at several points throughout the edit where I would show something to Kyle and Kyle's notes would correspond to something that I initially had like way back when, and then throughout for whatever reason, you know, because your own preconceptions of the film are constantly changing, and especially in reaction to the, you know, there's the movie that you shoot and then the movie that you actually have at the end of the day. And never the two shall meet, you know, and it was really cool pulling it back into that and rediscovering the film through these initial ideas and how they were still possible with what we had. And that was that was the most rewarding aspect of the edit. You know, I love just getting in the editorial and playing with everything. You know, I love playing with the footage and seeing the possibilities of what we shot. And, you know, this was an angle into it that I think was really unique to this project.
Yeah. And transitioning over to your guys' careers as a whole, I'm curious, starting with you, Rebecca, I've seen you've been really busy. You did a horror con recently, and now you'll be in attendance at the Austin Film Festival, which is really cool. I'm curious how that experience has been, and if you're starting to feel like you're building up a little bit of a fan base for yourself in your career.
I'm trying. it always feels like you're, you know, just climbing up a mountain a bit. And when you get to the top, there's like another mountain that you have to climb. but I'm really thankful for projects like these, especially this one that, you know, came to me, like Kyle said, we met in class, like you said, and then last January, he sent me a message over Twitter and was like, I have this script with this part. Will you take a look? And the minute I read it, I fell in love with it. And I was like, I have to be a part of this project. And I'm so thankful I am. And I feel like this is just another amazing role for me. And hopefully just, you know, will garner the attention that it deserves, because Kyle and Cameron and Sean and all of the cast and crew are just so incredible. And they deserve it. This movie deserves to be seen. So not just for me, but, you know, it's fun to have, you know, kind of fans from different, I don't know, I hate even saying the word fan, but people from different projects that have, you know me from other different things like SVU or the TV or the horror stuff. It's cool to see where people kind of come from and what they watch and what they love. And I know this will be another one for them, hopefully, to add to the list.
Well, circling back to you, Kyle, I'm curious for you, Kyle, what was the moment when you knew, whether it was you as a kid or a teenager, when did you know you had to pursue storytelling and filmmaking? How did that happen for you?
Oh, man. Well, do you want the 7-part saga here, or I can give you the Cliff Notes version of it?
You can give us the Odyssey version of it.
well, essentially, I've known I've been an actor for my whole life. But with the acting was always playwriting. They kind of went hand in hand. And I went to Cam and I actually met in college. We both went to Emerson. We both thankfully we both transferred in from other colleges. I was going to school for anthropology and sociology at the time.
No
and
kidding.
So yeah, my parents were real happy about the switch to acting, let me tell you.
Tell us about that conversation.
Yeah, right. take me back. They're happy with it now. But yeah, we went to Emerson together, and I was Cam's actor. Cam would always direct. He would write something, and I would be the actor in it. We made a romantic comedy, which we'll never see the light of day again. But we kept up the contact when we moved out to LA. And I think it's been in the working with Cam and also just being in Los Angeles where films happen that the filmmaking part of this whole experience really started to align as the center of what I was doing. Acting is still very much a part of what I do. I'm a SAG-AFTRA strike captain. I go out two times a week to picket for our rights and for a good deal. But when it comes to the meat of making a career in the industry, producing has opened up so many opportunities for me and then the big contact list that I have with all my friends I went to school with. And as a writer, I also do a lot of development. All of this has really coalesced into, I don't think anyone should focus on one thing. I think we all need to be hyphenates to really make a dent in the industry. And I think when it comes to working on this project with Cameron and Rebecca and Sean O'Brien, it really just became clear that this is how the industry can be, and why have it any other way?
Yeah, I'll shoot that question back to you, Cameron. Was there a pivotal moment in your life, either early on or later, where you knew you had to pursue filmmaking?
Yeah, I mean, it happened for me, thankfully, really early on. There's never really been a question about it since I was at least 12 or 13. I initially, on the flip side to Kyle, I initially wanted to be an actor. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and there's only so many opportunities to do that. Mostly they were school plays. So I did that for the longest time. And around 11 or 12, me and some neighborhood friends got our dad's video camera, got that out and started making something for ourselves. And that's when I quickly discovered how much I loved being behind the camera more. And you couldn't stop me from that day forward. I knew right away that's what I wanted to do with my life. And I have spent nearly every waking moment pursuing that ever since. So I feel very lucky in the sense that there was never really any sort of like, oh, what do I want to do? Where do I want to be in 10 years or anything like that? That answer has always been pretty clear. It's just the how to get there has always been the big mystery. And sure. But it's been, it's been the mystery of a lifetime.
Well, what I'll ask this to Cameron first, and then I'd also like to get the response from Kyle and Rebecca as well. What filmmakers, either independent or in the mainstream, have had an influence on your work and your creative vision? Let's start with you, Cameron.
Sure. Well, I mean, the very first movie that I ever remember watching is E.T. So in a way, Steven Spielberg has had this very primal, fundamental influence on my psyche, but just way back in the deepest recesses of my brain. But as I got to become more exposed to the wider world of film and of cinema, there are a lot of other directors that really speak to me. In college, that was, Stanley Kubrick and Paul Thomas Anderson were the really big revelations. But more recently, I've gone even further afield, and independent filmmakers like John Cassavetes and Andrew Bujalski have really influenced me, as well as, I believe they're called, they belong to this movement called the sensualists, movement, and that's filmmakers like Wong Kar-wai and Terrence Malick, people like that, where they really get a sense of conveying the experience of really being there in a way that isn't necessarily immersive. It really kind of speaks to this interior worldview that I find really interesting, and I love exploring. And I think I brought a lot of that into The Veil while still playing around with some more formal technical conceits. In a way, it was, I like to kind of think of it as this meeting between Western thought and Eastern aesthetics, which was a really interesting juxtaposition. And it feels, in that sense, very organic to who I am as a person and as an artist.
And what about you, Kyle? And it could be on the production side or the acting side, since you do both. I'm curious, who influences you?
Well, I had the joy of being a millennial. And because of that, I worked in a video store for 3 years. So working in a video store was essentially like basically pre-college work for me. My influences have always tended to come from the comedy side of things. Mel Brooks, for sure. The Coen brothers. But what's nice about the Coens is they also, you know, for every comedy, they have a thriller. Penny Marshall, you know, good, amazing directors like that. When it comes to something like The Veil, I've always been into the anthology. I've always been into Rod Serling, Twilight Zone. I really love M. Night and Hitchcock. You know, those sorts of, every film is a different, slightly uncomfortable, slightly jarring approach to the human condition. And I think when it comes to a movie like The Veil, it's actually inspired me more in the less comedic, but no less thoughtful approach to storytelling. And I think going forward, there's going to be a lot more in the career that I want to do that looks more like what Cameron has done with The Veil, as opposed to what my comedy instincts try to direct me to. I'll always do comedy. There will always be, you know, I think I learned a lot actually about reaction shots from something like Young Frankenstein, which is a comedy, one of the best comedies, but the horror elements are present. And I think they do inspire a lot of what makes that movie good. And so I think there will always be comedy in what I do, but I can't wait to work in the darker corners of human thought.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because, you know, in my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, but I always kind of thought comedy and thriller were sort of flip sides of the same coin, because it's the tension and the uncomfortable moments that make both work, if that makes sense.
It does. And there are, I just want to say, you have, when the big crowd watches this movie, there are two moments where at the last place, at the previous festival, where we had shouts of laughter. Because the tension was so ample and the moment was so quirky that it just worked. And it's really nice to see how the tension does. People want a tension release. A little
exactly.
bit of tension
no,
release
exactly.
goes a long way, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was really cool to learn as the movie was playing.
And Rebecca, what about you? I know we've probably chatted about this before in an earlier episode, but tell us again, you know, who influences your work?
Oh no, you're good. I mean, they already named so many great directors. I mean, obviously Spielberg for sure in the beginnings, because I remember seeing so many of those movies and just the magnitude of them. But also the characters are so rich, and that was always something interesting to me. Like Kyle mentioned, M. Night Shyamalan, Sixth Sense is one of my favorite horror movies and one of my favorite movies of all time. For me, that was one that really in that decade really changed the genre for me, because it really showed me that, you know, in addition to obviously the ones that came before it, like The Exorcist and The Shining, but at that moment of what actors can do in a horror film, that it doesn't have to be only campy and unrealistic. Like it could be deep and dark and rich and like full of so much depth. So that for me is like something that it will always be seared in my mind, and I cry every time I watch that movie still. So he was a big influence. Christopher Nolan is another one where I'm always fascinated by his films, because they always weave such interesting stories with characters that are rich. A recent one would be Mike Flanagan for sure. Just started the Fall of the House of Usher, which you know, I think he also creates such interesting stories with characters that, you know, as an actor, you want to play. And that is what I'm, you know, constantly looking for me is characters that I can connect to. So those are just a few. There's lists and lists, I'm sure, as Cameron and Kyle have too. So, but that's a couple.
Well, you know, The Veil looks amazing. What I've seen is visually stunning and really well done. And of course, Rebecca's is always good. So, you know, we wish you guys the best of luck. Keep us posted on the success of the film. And Kyle, Cameron, and Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much.
Okay, you guys take care.
Thank you for listening to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, a podcast created and hosted by filmmakers Jeff Stolen and Andrew Lamping and produced by Melody Lopez.
Our theme song was composed by the enchanting Stephen D. Bennett.
Make sure to follow or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on and stay tuned for future episodes.